Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever, but, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say, no human is limited, so I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello and welcome back to another episode brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, look, Matt is in Tokyo. He has landed. He has not eaten any sashimi yet. He's staying clear of the fish, but he has had some good grub and a good hot meal, I have heard. We're enjoying the athletics. We hope you are too. Let's get into it because bloody hell, we only recorded, 48 hours ago, and so much has happened since then.
So much has happened. I mean, start with, I was in a stadium tonight, epic stadium, really is sort of breathtaking. And yeah, weather is stifling, man. I don't appreciate it at home, definitely, you know, when you hear, you know, Crammy and Paula on comms, and you know, you hear people say how hot it is, and you just don't appreciate it. You get here, and I think I touched down at about 6:30 this morning, and it was like, go outside, it was roasting, can't breathe, it's so humid. And then obviously throughout the day, it just gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and more humid. So yeah, it is very, very tough conditions. And I think, start with the women's 1500, for me it showed. I think there was it was not particularly quick for how these women are used to running, you know, 2:07 through that first 800. And I could already tell, my tickets were amazing. We were right on that 1500 start, and you know, I could tell the likes of Nikki Hiltz and basically all the others who weren't the four that got away were just struggling. You know, Sarah Healy, I think will be slightly disappointed with her champs, after sort of what looked like a really good season was about to pan out, the way she started things. You know, yeah, even Nikki Hiltz, I think Sinclair Johnson's been in great form. She was kind of disappointed in the final. And I think it literally, you could just tell, I think the conditions, are affecting them. I think obviously race to race, you're going to be slightly more fatigued because of the conditions. You're not going to recover quite as well. And this is why I'm very interested to see how those guys who ran the 10,000 in those conditions, how they double back in the 5,000, or even those who are doing the 15. Obviously we know some of them are going to double back in the 5K as well. And that, yeah, it's a following morning, how they're going to cope with that. And even how Kipyegon's going to cope. So I think that was a big part, because it was a 63 first lap, and it was just Kipyegon doing the business up at the front. And yes, the last 300 was 44 and she closed really well. I haven't looked at the official splits. I was just doing the maths while I was watching the race, but yeah, she just turned on the afterburners, pulled away and dominated really. And Hull, I think had to go with it. Unfortunately, gets caught by Dorcas Iwoi, who I said is one to watch. And I thought the Kenyans might have gone 1-2-3. They almost went 1-2-3. Blimey,
mate! What I'd say about Jess Hull, obviously, she's finished bronze. Maybe could have got the silver, but I think she's had a fabulous, fabulous run. And I think we started writing her off like maybe a couple months ago, just thinking that she looked a bit cooked in the season.
Yep.
And fair play to her. She's made it all the way there. She's got herself another major medal and really cementing herself as for sure one of the best in the world. Like, so, so good, consistently being up there and battling the likes of that Kenyan trio.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, just cementing herself, like you said, as one of the best. And she just seems like the only one who can actually go with Kipyegon. No one else. I mean, and she was the one really who bridged the gap for Dorcas and Nelly Chepchirchir as well. Like, yeah. If it wasn't for Hull, they would have been a lot, you know, much, much further back behind Kipyegon, I imagine. You know, she's the only one who can go with.
That's what gives me the confidence in Hull, that she can go, and when Kipyegon like moves on, she can go on and actually start winning these races. Whereas if you're always racing for second, when Kipyegon goes, someone else will come along and do the same. There'll be another Kenyan who comes along and does the same. So actually, she's still trying to win these races. She's not just thinking, oh, I can't win. I can't go with it. I'm just going to sit in and kick against the rest of the pack and just really gets after it. And I think you made the comparison to Laura Muir from a few years ago. With like, yeah. That's almost where Jess Hull is now. But yeah.
The thing is, you talk about when Kip Yegon moves on, I think the problem Hull's got is she's in her prime. And you know, when Kip Yegon eventually moves on, I think Hull will be, the last two, three years for Hull could not have gone any better. Yeah. And, you know, so when you're thinking about LA, I think she's going to be a little bit, there's going to be someone else. There's going to be someone else who is coming into to their prime by the time LA swings around, and whether she's good enough to sort of keep improving from here on out, or whether we've seen the best and the fastest times from Jess Hull, it would make sense because Kip Yegon has paced her to every PB that she's ever done. So, yeah. There is that. I think what was interesting about today's race is the fact that Kip Yegon just slowly wound it up over that last 600, and it just didn't give the likes of Nikki Hiltz or anyone like that to get in with a sniff. You know, Hailu, Kazimierska, you know, Madeline, the French lady, just anyone, Sarah Healy, just no one was able to get near it at any point, and it just increased at the wrong time for Lola's those athletes.
It's been the case for the past few years, though, hasn't it, mate? Like, that's the thing.
But
like,
that the way she ran that is kind of, I think the only, like, the third lap was they went 207, and then the third lap was a 60.61. I'm pretty sure. Again, I haven't looked at the splits. I'm just going off of looking at the clock. They were 207 at 800. They were 308 at 1200. So whatever that third lap was, and this is how I think if someone like Kerr is to perform well, he needs to put like a 55 in that third lap for me, because we'll move to the men's 1500 semis if you want, but he didn't look convincing enough for me in that semi-final. And the way Whiteman's closing, the way Whiteman's looking, I actually think, yeah, I think Whiteman's going to come away with a medal the way he's looking if he gets his positioning right. Obviously, there's a lot more boys to contend with. You've got that other semi-final, but now Hocker's not in the equation. I mean, But yeah, that was the women's 1500. And obviously, there's not heaps to report because of the fact there was no Brits in there. I think Laura Muir would have liked to race like that for sure. The way it wound up, that is kind of that's how things used to play out. You know, back in 2015, 2016, 2017, when Kip Yegon won her first title, that's how things used to play out. But I mean, this lady is four world titles. I mean, it's what, three Olympic golds. She's just an animal. And, you know, it's going to be, Chebet was there in the stands watching her. And I think it's going to be great to see, you know, both of those go toe for toe in the five. And like I said, this might be the last we see of Kip Yegon on the track, but she could be winning these titles for.
Yeah, mate, on that women's 5K, could easily be one of the race of the champs with those two going toe to toe. Like I would have said, we've been saying for the past few years, always the men's 15, but yeah, let's chat about that semi-final now, because we're going to be missing. Can have one of the big three in that semi-final, and it's just going to be Josh Kerr. And mate, you say Kerr didn't look convincing. Mate, I think that's just a case of what happens when you're trying to run within yourself, and when you're trying to conserve energy and just get the job done. You're never going to look as smooth and as fluid as if you're running all out and making moves.
I think the problem
he did
with
the
this
right thing. Like, he got himself in a great position on the shortest line, made sure he got through. Hopefully that fall wasn't kind of any worse than it kind of looked. It looked fine, but like, you never know whenever you hit the deck. So hopefully he's feeling all right after that. Obstacle for me now for Kerr is the pressure, because I think going into this now,
I don't think he's that under pressure. I know he's a defending champion. I actually think Lauris is the man to beat, the way he's been looking and the way his season's gone. I don't think Kerr's under that much pressure, to be honest. I think, obviously, especially if someone like Hocker and Ingebrigtsen were also in that final, that would take the pressure off of Kerr a little bit, and that would help her. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Without those two, the pressure's all on Kerr.
Kerr, for Kerr to win, the pace needs to be hot, and he needs to come from behind, coming off that final bend, that sort of thing, you know, very similar to what he did in Paris. I know Hocker snuck on the inside, but he needs to run. For me, the only way Kerr wins if it's a Budapest final or if it's a Paris Olympic final, like, it's that sort of final is going to set Kerr up for the best result. I'm not sure he has the ability to hold off a Laros, a Whiteman, you know, both of those chariots. You know,
I don't think he needs to. You look at him at Grand Slam this year. When he was coming into it, before he's even started specifically training.
No, he does. He's racing, even at Jonah, he's racing different beasts. I just can't see him holding. I can't see him doing a centro and being able to hold those guys off. I cannot see it happening. yeah, for me, the, you know, I'd actually, obviously, unfortunately, I mean, that Hocker incident was just a fucking joke. I mean, that's 1500 meter running. There was no malice.
You don't think he should be DQ'd?
I don't think he should be DQ'd at all.
Mate, what are you on about?
Mate, there's zero DQ for me there. He's just like, he's like gone sideways to get through that.
No, he's just ran crap. He's literally thought to himself, that's just poor tactics. You can't just push your way through because the gap doesn't open up. And this is the problem, right?
Yeah,
Hocker, for the past few years, has been making a career out of just hugging the rail and getting lucky, right? And it opened up on the inside. If you keep making that your tactic, one of these days, that's going to happen like it did yesterday. And he fully deserves that. Look, I'm a big Cole Hocker fan, and I love the way races. I want him to be in the final. But for me, that's a flat out DQ, and you can't do that. You start letting people do that because they're Olympic champion, you just take the piss out of the whole sport. Like, how can you be like, oh, I just run there, and if there's no room, I'm just going to push someone out of the way. If Giles does that in a British champs, everyone's going crazy and being like, no way should you be doing that.
The thing is, he didn't push fuck, and he like slithered through a little gap there. For me, he went sideways, sort of weaved his way through that gap. Nilsson's going backwards.
There's no gap though.
Markin's going backwards.
But it doesn't matter if they're going backwards. He's positioning himself wrong.
I said before the champs, you know, Hocker is, you know, one of the best at getting out of terrible positions. And for me, he got out of there fair and square. I think it's a real shame they've DQ'd the Olympic champion. They've DQ'd the man who's going to take that title. But anyway,
it's a shame he's not in there, but it's the right call. Like, you make a mockery of the sport.
Obviously, just like the women's, you know, people have been upgraded. I mean, how many 1500 finals have we seen over the last 3 or 4 years where they have not had 12 in the final? They've had 13, they've had 14, they've had 15, because everyone just gets fucking upgraded.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Falcons, you know, he's been pumped up there and just trying to
think. Hocker would have been better.
I agree with you though. When you watch it back, he had multiple occasions to actually get out. You know, on the back straight, he had occasion to get out. Even on the home straight, he had a choice at one point coming off the bend that he could have got out. At the bell, he was.
You know the funny thing? He would have got through if he didn't push through that gap, because Gourley got through, and Hocker's in a better position than Gourley. But he was not patient enough. It serves him right. He's positioned himself badly. That's racing, and that's,
he's let too many people by at the wrong time, and he's had a stinker there.
Yeah.
Tactically, but I think his 100% fitness is showing. Anyway, he's just going to be fresh leg for that 5K. He's going to go in there.
He'll win the 5K easily.
He's going to make the 5K even more exciting. Koskren did a great job to get through there. He closed really well, showing that close. So, yeah, I mean, my money's just going with and. You know, we probably have to go there and talk about it. You know, those who have done, it's funny, I was exchanging a few messages with Dave Reagan today, hopefully going to catch up with him tomorrow or whenever we get the chance. Those who have done Grand Slam, and I think a lot of people are thinking it and seeing it, just look a little sluggish. And the only one I think who's got it right is Cole Hocker, and he's looking better than ever. But everyone else.
Well, he's not busy because tactically he's looking terrible.
No, I know, but for me,
no, it's not about
those looking sluggish. The guys who did the 5K, they're looking sluggish. The 800 boys, we'll get onto that now. Obviously, their heat, they're looking a little sluggish. Both Wanyonyi and A-Rop, for me, didn't look amazing today in their heat at all.
So, but sometimes that's the way, right? We don't know when these athletes come in. We don't know when they fly in. And sometimes the ones who don't look great in heat, then pick up and look around a semi and then are okay. Like, particularly those kind of guys like Robbie Wanyonyi, they're good enough to, it just doesn't matter.
Well, you know what, the other day I was saying, sort of, you know, I think some people have prepared for, like, they prepared for the heat, but they haven't really prepared for that humidity. And look, the Kenyans are definitely in that bracket. Like, they don't do any form of sort of like heat training, humidity training or anything like that. You know, they're so focused and they train up in Kenya, and that's the most important thing. And for most of them, it works. Like, you look at Kipyegon, you look at Chebet, everyone, like, all females are absolutely flying. But yeah, I just wonder if that plays a little bit of a factor. But yeah, let's break down these heats then. We'll just focus on the heats with the Brits in and in some of the big names, to be honest. Because yeah, heat one was no one really of sort of importance to us, obviously. Spaniard,
well,
in there,
yeah, the only thing I'll say, mate, do you know someone we did not talk about in our preview was Sujati, and I think it's just because he's been a bit quiet this year for his own standards, but in recent years he's been one of the guys who has shown so much promise, particularly in championship races, and I don't know if we're just sleeping on him.
Well, we can go there and we can talk about the semi-final lineup, because talk about semi-finals of death. They were saying about 1500. I didn't think that 1500 semi-final was too, I mean, yes, it was, but the problem is when you go on like current form, like Whiteman's current form hasn't been amazing and sort of like and stuff like that. So when you look at these semi-finals, like, it's difficult. Like, I know you had all those guys in the same semi, but this men's 800 is a joke. Four guys who have medaled at the world championships: Addison, Arop, Wanyonyi, Sajati, Hanguri's in there. If Mark Inglis is in there, I mean, yeah, that first semi-final.
Top two is crazy. Obviously, fastest. Top two, big.
Got to be quick, but to be fair, you've got two of the fastest front runners in Arop and Wanyonyi. No one front runs like them. So if you're Patterson, you've just got to pray that this race gets out. Because, you know, I think, but, you know, saying that, Wanyonyi for me didn't look amazing. Arop didn't look amazing. Patterson's just got to pray that race gets out, to be honest with you. But yeah, Arop finishing third in his heat, you know, Atui came like storming by him, and Patterson looked really good. He was in all right spots, obviously beating 2 hours as well. So, but yeah, that's semi-final one. And
hey, what are your thoughts on having the fastest lose in the eight? Because, like, we've obviously moved away from it.
I think it does need to be done, because I think you can front run, you can attack in 800. There's no excuse for it. I don't think it's a huge advantage going in those later heats.
I don't mean it's a huge advantage, but I just don't know if it's like
margins are smaller.
Should they even have to think about the time? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a huge advantage, because in the first heat, you just know, oh, we need to run at a decent pace. But, like, I don't think
you could. I mean, with three semis, I mean, each semi final has 9 men in, and
yeah, that's something. But you could go 4 from each, right? Or
There's three. No, three you could each, go yeah, three yeah. from each. Like, every,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, actually, no. Sorry. The semis are just... Sorry. It goes from lane 2 to 9. That's why it's confusing me. I was like, oh, there must be 9 guys in there, but there's only 8 guys in there. So yeah, I guess it just... Yeah, 3 doesn't go into 8, does it? So you've got to have...
You could have 9 in the final if that's just how it comes out. Do you know what I mean?
You definitely have 9 in the final. Yeah. They've done that at British Champs before. Had 9 in the final.
Well, so they'll end up having 10 in the final, because someone will fall.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually.
Yeah, like, I just think you just change the final qualification slightly to just make it a better qualification. Like, no one's going to care if there's an extra guy in the final.
Yeah. Someone we should talk about is the Irish guy, that McPhillips. I mean, boy, he looked really good. Former Euro Junior. Former Euro Junior champ, I think, over the 1500. Yeah, he's looked fantastic, mate. Ran his 144 in Ireland back in July, but hasn't done too much since then. Hasn't over-raced beyond his national champs. And yeah, but he looks smooth in his heat for the win. So he goes in semi-final 2 with Max Bergen and with Brazier at 2 hour.
Yeah. So again,
yeah, that too. Semi-final 2 for me is like, you've got Brazier, you've got Bergen, and you've got 2 hour. It's another big, you know, and Panici, the Italian, who's having a great season. And Slimani Mula. But then semi-final 3 for me, I'm like, it's, you know, you got Atui, Masilela, Hopple, the Kenyan look poor, Crestan, you know, although he's fast on paper. So the problem is, do you know how they seed it? They seed it on these fucking world rankings, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. Well, they do seed it on that.
They seed it on what happens in heats. Then serves them right. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It doesn't help. And this is a problem. It's like a Champions League draw. It doesn't help when Arop's coming third in his heat. It's like, then he's going to get dumped. And that's the problem. That's why you have these crazy semi-finals.
Yeah. Makes sense, though.
Yeah. So anyway, Bergen, I mean, yeah, the Brits, I thought Patterson and Bergen looked great, and yeah, Crawcombe ran a great heat. Well, he was unlucky, to be honest, I think.
Yeah, it was always going to be tough for him, wasn't it? And I think
always going to be tough. Put a shift in, closed hard. And I think, again, it just comes down to perhaps just having a little bit more confidence and just getting further up at like a crucial point in that race. So you're closer to the action when it gets going. But I mean, he can be pretty happy with the guys he's lived with there. And in like, you know, he was only, what, couple points of a second behind Arop and stuff. So yeah. 141, 142 guys, and he's held his own, really. He's got a bright future, I think.
I think so, mate. He's gotta be pretty happy for that. Look, should we chat about the big man, Mr. Beamish?
What a race. But again, that race, look, George Beamish has an incredible last 100. His last water jump was poor. He stumbled and collapsed a little bit in that last water jump, and he's still closed up on the boys and on El Bakkali. And when he gets going, when he gets a sniff of the win, he's just ridiculous. Like, he is just untouchable. However, I do think El Bakkali thought he'd won that. El Bakkali going into that last hurdle thought he'd won. He was running in. Beamish then comes up on him. El Bakkali like quickly picks up his pace again. So he does have enough to respond, but he's run out of room. You know, there's no, Beamish has got all the momentum by that point. You're not living with him. And, but then again, I look at that and I'm like, I think there should be a few men disappointed that they didn't try and take things on. I mean, Rupert is one.
Oh, mate.
German and Muria as well. You know, how is Muria not, you know, he's in Japan, he's run 8.0 this year, he's in fine shape, he doesn't really have an electric kick. For one, he foots on, so that doesn't help him when they're trying to run 58s. I know he does hurdle when they're moving real fast. I'm like, mate, just why wasn't he just, you know, get that first K done in 2:42, 2:43 and ask the question of these guys who haven't shown form? But yeah, they played into Beamish's hands. And, you know, Mikowski gets it going in true Ed Eystone fashion, trying to drill that last 800 in 2 minutes. He almost does it. And, you know, he was great. I think he pushed a little too hard, Mikowski, with sort of 500 to go. I think he pushed a little too much.
It's crazy, mate. It's obviously like, if you'd said 2 years ago that, like, oh yeah, world champs in 25, they're going to win a men's seaplane 8:33, you'd be like, no way. I just think, like,
it has happened before. Like, it's, you know, that winning
recently, or am I forgetting a race? I feel like recently it's not been the case at all.
No, not too recently, but like you have, you know, like the Kenboy days, you know, when Kenboy and
But I mean, recent years, like I think we're just seeing a lot of the races in the same way, like our predictions for the 15 as well, like just to get a bit slower again and for all kind of these fast races to just calm down a bit. Yeah.
I think this is the,
it just opens up for a lot more athletes as well. But what it also does for me is, it kind of just makes it seem a real shame that we've got less athletes in there, particularly like from a British perspective, for example, because you're like, and I'm not saying they're going to go and medal perhaps, but like it does open it up and gives more people opportunities to kind of have a good experience of the race when they are run this slow. And it's just a shame not to see people being selected, you know?
No, I agree. But I think the conditions are causing the races to be slow. Maybe we are shifting back towards that way. I think one of the reasons we are is, I keep saying it, is because of the depth in the sport right now. You know, even you look at that steeple and, you know, sort of 5-6 seconds separated all those guys. And yeah, in the 1500, it's like less than, if you went on their PBs, it's like less than a second. It's like 2 seconds for the whole field. And the majority of them is like a second difference. So I think the problem is the fields are so deep now. It's like, well, how do you beat these? Like, how do you beat these people? But you got to play to strengths. You got to do what you've been doing all year, man. And this is why I say I'm disappointed with Rupert, disappointed with Mura, because I'm like, you guys can go run 8:10, and like 8:10 is, you know, they've run 8:0 this year. They've run 8:01, you know, 8:02, 8:03. Like, what are we saying those conditions are? Maybe those conditions are worth 10 seconds. So why not just try set off at 8:10, 8:15 and see what happens and see how many people you drop in the process. And then you're more likely to grow in confidence throughout the race. And look, it might go tits up, but it went tits up for them anyway. Like they had...
I think that's it. And it's just classic, mate. Everyone back in their kick. Like everyone back in their kick all the time. And I just
it's the same it's... in a 10, you know? I'm just like, why didn't...
Yeah,
I'm
so naive to think.
Why didn't Fisher try and swing things out of 10? But... Mm-hmm. The conditions are brutal. And look, you know, I definitely had that opinion of like, you know, these guys need to just back themselves a bit more and challenge and get after it. But I think when I got here, I was like, mate, to be fair, I mean, you don't even feel like doing anything, let alone bloody running. So.
Yeah. But like, there's no excuse for that when you're a world-class athlete.
No, it's what they train for, right? It's what they live for. And they're like, they've known the World Cup's going to be in Tokyo for the last 3 years. Anyway, men's steeple was a shame for El Bakkali.
It wasn't. I can't believe he got beat, mate. The guy's just—he's ridiculous in championship races.
I think he was. I think one of the reasons he was so emotional as well is he was kicking himself. Like he knew he was. To be fair, him and Beamish, it was cool to see them two celebrating together. You know, they're in the water jump like that. That was cool. You know, it was two great guys of the sport, really. Mm. But I think El Bakkali on the day could have put that to bed, but he thought he had the job done.
But he didn't.
Anyway. So. Men's steeple, women's steeple is tomorrow night, just before the men's 1500. So, obviously, oh, by the way, yeah, we Sarah Tate, man. Fuck. I hope she's okay. That was horrible. What happened to her? But yeah, we're obviously going to see Elise Dorna so strong in her heat. I mean, I'm just like, she might get another PB in the final because that women's steeple will go fast.
That's what I mean. The women aren't running.
Yeah, like, women aren't fucking about too much. But I think this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. In the women's, there are clear favourites. The depth is not there like it is in the men's races. Kip Yegon is so much better than everyone else. Chebet, you know, she can, that was quite tactical, that women's 10. But again, you know, once they broke away, that was it. They're clear favourites. And I think, again, you look at the...
Well, I'm saying the times they're running, though, are not like, they're not ridiculously slow.
No, it's, yeah.
So it's clearly not, they can run fast. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at least Fawn's running a PB, like you say. And yeah, maybe it's overdue, but she's still running a PB. They're not running.
Yeah, I know. And those women's steeple heats were pretty swift. Like,
that's
it was,
what I'm saying.
Yeah. Definitely. So
it's not impossible.
But anyway, we talk about conditions. I mean, we will talk about the men's marathon and, you know, poor old Emil just overheating at 38, 39K. He got dropped from the group. Yeah. You know, it was, I mean, that marathon just flew by. I actually managed to download it and watch it on the plane, so that was nice. But just like, there's just all there, and I actually thought 2.9 in those conditions was bloody good. But what a race for the ages. I love, bring back marathons finishing in the Olympic on the track, you know, bring that back. 350 meters on the track,
the full start yeah, as well. That was
so
unreal.
Good, you know, I think you get those, it's just incredible. They went into the stadium and you heard the crowd just erupt when they entered the stadium at the end, and like as they were approaching the stadium, it was just, there was, I just thought it was just so much anticipation building. You had 5-6 men like all together with about less than a K to go as they like built towards the stadium in the backdrop, and I just thought amazing. And then obviously they come in and crowd erupts and the, you know, sort of three of them break away and just do that last lap, bring that back, you know, bring that back, start and finishing those major championship marathons in the stadium. But yeah, what a race. And I think just a shame for Emil, really, that it didn't quite click for him and the heat got the better of him. And that is a shame.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? But look, he'll be back and he'll have learned loads from this in terms of like not just the race itself, but another marathon build up, you know. And
where do you think he goes now? Like where do you think he goes? Do you think he...
I think he goes and chases the time.
I think Emil has to now. I think Emil has to just go and, you know, because next year there's nothing really, it's Europeans, and but it's when does he chase that time? Does he try and squeeze one out like in Valencia or Seville?
No, I think that's the thing with him. Like he's got in his corner. He's going to make sure that he recovers off this one and then build up properly for another one. I don't think they're like 4-year plan or whatever they have, 10-year plan, right? I don't think that changes. I don't think they're the sort of pairing coach and athlete that are going to be like, oh, I didn't go to plan, so we're going to go and try and pop one soon. Instead, it will be, look, usual break, usual rebuild, and then we go from there. I think, like, could be, I think the earliest we see him is London, right? But I think he's better off waiting and going somewhere a bit quicker, to be honest.
Well, yeah, I think he's better off avoiding London.
Well, I just think, like, he's run decent.
Problem is with London, unless you're ready to run too far,
he might well be, but I think he's training Berlin or Valencia next year. Yeah,
I mean, his training partner, I guess they don't really do much training together, but share the same coach, Petros, almost won gold, the German. Fantastic guy. He is like the most humblest, fun guy that you'll ever meet. Yeah, again, it was a shame that I think he was trying really hard, actually, but I think he just gave Simbu a sniff at the wrong time. You know, it's like El Bakkali gave Beamish a sniff. And problem is, you know, when you just relax a teeny bit in that last 100, that last 50, that's all they need. That's all that person needs. Like, you just can't show any signs of weakness. Because the minute they make contact, you know, they're going all the way to the line until they get you. They got that momentum. And the Italian as well, huge run from Inaui. So Iwani, sorry. I really enjoyed that men's marathon. And I think after, it's all about surprises like that. And watching championship marathons play out for me is almost, well, I prefer watching a championship marathon play out than I do watching a London.
100%.
Yeah, because I think when you watch London,
particularly the Olympics, because actually you get all the big names as well.
But I think there is some argument with the world champs. Is that marathon needed? will that marathon still exist? The World Championships marathon in the
next. I should see why not. Unless they've got like no money and they can't afford to put it on, why not have it and give athletes an opportunity?
Thought it's great. You get big fields. The crowd, yeah, by the way, were amazing. You know, they're all over it. Absolutely.
I don't see the drawback. Do you see what I mean? Like,
I think the problem is, mate, you've now got seven marathon majors, which are big paydays for marathon runners. So they're all gonna drift towards those. And then on top of that, you have your Valencias, you have your Sevilles, you have all these other marathons that are gonna be your Amsterdams, your Frankfurts, all of this, which we know people are doing. So I think there is a lot of marathons that are just gonna tempt people to do. So you get weak fields.
Yeah. But
and I said it probably is when you could obviously, I mean it obviously is, right? It's the easiest gold championship gold to win. Mm. Out of all the events,
maybe 100, you only have to run for 9 seconds. So.
Now I'm just talking about the guys, you know, the guys and girls that you have to beat. You know, in relative terms, the athlete you have to be to podium in the marathon at the World Championships is nowhere near the same athlete that you have to be to podium in any other event.
Yeah, for sure, mate.
That's why you wonder, you know, like fuck me, World Athletics are thinking about making it a mile steeple because it's the 3K is not entertaining enough. I mean, what an advert for the 3K steeple, you know, and in the heats again, you know, people falling, clattering, drama. And then you get a storyline like Beamish. That's a race of the champs pretty much. And World Athletics are like, oh, well, yeah, we might need to cut a mile steeple, you know, anyway. So that's mate. I mean, that's pretty much it. We roll on now. We've got some great days of athletics coming up. And obviously that men's 1500 tomorrow, not the men's 1500 we thought we were going to be watching. This World Champs has been the champs of the underdog.
It has, mate, and it's a good job we don't get paid to do predictions, mate, because fuck me, we suck at
saying that. I actually, I put a wager on Dorcas getting on the podium today. So she had me money. But mate, right now, let's hear it. I'm going to go ballsy, and I'm going to go Whiteman wins tomorrow.
Wow. Yes. No way for me, mate. Kerr. Mate,
his positioning's ace. Kerr's going to tie up. Kerr's going to feel like Kerr. The problem is, he has the same as the problem Jakob has. Everyone's looking at him. Everyone's going, what's Kerr going to do? Lauris is cool, calm and collected. I think...
Mate, that's what I said to you earlier. Then you're saying there's no pressure on him.
No, I just think Lauris might just go a bit too soon, might just get a bit antsy.
I don't
think
Lauris wins.
I think Whiteman comes good, mate. If he can stay clear of all the antics. Honestly, beyond Kerr, Whiteman and Lauris, I'm like, I don't know who else features.
Mate, Gawley could get himself up there.
Gawley could, maybe.
Looking at the guys in the final now. Like,
I think
the final we're not expecting. Like Gawley's got a big opportunity tomorrow. And the other guy as well, Jonah Kovach, mate, he is, like, he's not like amazing, but the guy's shown some serious talent this season.
He's got to get himself in the right positions. Mm. You know, Kovach has impressed me in a sense that there's always been a lot of panicking for those auto spots. And I think people like Hocker, Kerr, Lauris, like all these guys, they want to win. They want to, well, not win, but they want to be in at least like sort of 1-2-3 in the heats and the semis. Whereas Kovach is, he's getting the job done. Like he's really just prioritized just getting in that top five, top six. And he's done it very well. And so tomorrow, but the thing is running for fifth, running for sixth is a different ball game to running to win. And, you know, he hasn't shown that he's got loads left in that last 50, but maybe he's just being able to keep
it really slow. Adrian Ben with the 800 meter speed. Who knows, mate? If it's a
355, Whiteman's way better than him over the 800.
Not anyway.
Jonah Kovach is a shout for an outside shot there, mate, to be fair.
Yeah, I still think Kerr wins, but for me, yeah, Kovach gets on the rostrum. Mate, we might see a British 1-2-3.
No, we won't.
It's more likely now than it was at the start of the champs, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's more likely now, but we won't see a bridge 1-2-3. Yeah. Be amazing if Gawley comes like.
Be amazing if Gawley won and then all six. Three of them won it. That would be so good. So, so good. And I feel like he deserves it as well. It's the best in Britain, right? It's unbeatable, a British champ. So if you're the best in Britain over 1500 meters, you're the best in the world. So we go from there.
Indeed. Just looking now, mate. Kovach is 10-1. The odds have been slashed.
Mate, I saw Jake Smith won money on Beamish. Shout out to Jake Smith.
I reckon he had Coffee Club insight. Mate, I mean, Whiteman was 28-1 the other day. Now he's 14-1. So after his semi, after he looked so impressive, I think a lot of people fancy him. Yeah. Right, man. Well, I'll see you back here. see you back here tomorrow.
Yeah, you certainly shall. Look, enjoy the races, Matt. Listeners, enjoy the races as well. Thanks for listening to us, as always, and we'll catch you very, very soon.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.